Listen, I think it's important. We can't just ignore this morning's events and not say anything. So I guess we should dedicate the learning we're doing today for Ilui Neshama, for those who were murdered this morning, and for and over the last few weeks, I guess, as well. Last week and previously, and for a Refuah Shlema for all of those who were wounded in these terrible events. I'd say more, but I really don't have anything more to say. I don't know what there is to say. So let's learn Torah. That's the best thing we can do. That's the way a Jew responds. This week's parasha begins with what might be considered the strangest pasuk in the entire Torah. The parasha begins, Ve'ele toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. How would we translate the phrase Ele toldot? These are the generations, these are the descendants. I would therefore expect to find either a list or a description of Yitzchak's descendants, which in fact, the next pasuk begins to tell us. If I skip the rest of that pasuk, if it would just say, Ve'ele tovot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Yitzchak or Yitzchak ben Avraham, and then continue, Vayihi Yitzchak ben Arbaim Shana, Yitzchak was 40 years old when he got married, and his wife had no children, she was barren, and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything would be fine. But the pasuk inserts a phrase before that that seems entirely out of place. The pasuk actually says, Ve'ela toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Again, the phrase ben Avraham seems a little bit superfluous. And it then tells us, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. That, to me, is perhaps the strangest pasuk in the entire Torah. Ve'ela toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the descendants, these are the generations of Yitzchak. Avraham fathered Yitzchak. In other words, if it started Ela Toldot Avraham, which there is no pasuk in the Torah, and we'll talk about that in a minute, there is no pasuk in the Torah that says Ela Toldot Avraham. But had that been the beginning, the Ela Toldot Avraham, Avraham Yeholid Yitzchak, Beseder, had it begun Ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Vayihi Yitzchak ben Arbim Shana Bekaftot Rivka, also Beseder. But what does this mean? These are the descendants of Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth, or fathered, I guess, Yitzchak. This pasuk requires explanation. And that's what I'd like to do this morning. I'd like to try to understand this pasuk through looking at the rest of the parasha. But before we look at the rest of the parasha, in order to be able to address that question, we need to step back and look at the expression Ela Toldot as it appears throughout Sefer Bereishit. Because this expression, or similar ones, we'll see that there's a few. At one point it's Zeh Sefer Toldot, but that expression appears 10 times in the book of Bereishit. 10 times in the book of Bereishit. And to the best of my knowledge, only two other times in the rest of the entire Tanakh. Once in the book of Bamidbar, and once in the book of Rut. To the best of my knowledge. And this is not coincidental. And I'd like to share with you now something that I learned from someone that I've been privileged to learn Tanakh from over the years, Rav Yoel Binun. That's someone whose name I assume is familiar to everyone here. So I'm privileged to count him as one of my neighbors, and he often gives shiurim in my community, and whatever he does, if I'm able to, I run to listen to him. And this is something that that I heard from him a number of times. I believe the one who first drew attention to this, I think, was one of his teachers, Rav Mordechai Breuer. I believe he's the one who first drew attention to this phenomenon, unless I'm wrong and it was noticed beforehand. But in any case, Rav Breuer pointed out that if you look at it correctly, you will notice that and I'll show you this on the board in one moment, the entire book of Bereishit can be divided into sections by those phrases of Ela Toldot. And in fact, the entire book of Bereishit can be read as one collection of 10 what he called Sifrei Toladot. 10, they're not exactly books, they're not exactly lists, but 10 descriptions of Toladot, some of which are longer, some of which are shorter. The shortest one is only a few psukim, the longest one is 7 or 8 chapters, I think. But the entire book of Bereishit can be understood as a list of these Sifrei Toladot. First, let's look at that. Let's just see the structure and then we'll try to understand what it means. The first time the phrase Ela Tovel appears actually is at the beginning of the second perek of Reishi. The first perek would have to be, we have to figure out whether that's a separate unit or not, but let's ignore that question at least for now. From the beginning of Perek Bet Pasuk Dalid, we have the expression Ela Toldot. This marker is not good. Ela Toldot Hashamayim V'Ha'aretz. Okay, so according to Rav Breuer's understanding, that introduces not just the psukim that immediately follow it, but the entire section, everything that follows, will be under the headline of Ela Toldot Shamayim V'Aretz until the next time we find the expression. And the next time we find the expression is at the beginning of Perakei. Perakei Pasuk Aleph. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. Okay, so I guess it's from this pasuk that he took the phrase Sifrei Toldot. Okay, so from the beginning of Perek Bet Pasuk Dalet, until the rest of Perek Bet Gimel and Dalet, all that is under the heading of Ela Toldot Shamayim Va'aretz. Then we have Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, and that takes us all the way through to Perek Vav Pasuk Tet, Ela Toldot Noach. No, that's Perek Vav. The hay, no. The hay.
Ah, the hay is not.
It's a, if you're using a Koran Tanakh. The numbers on the outside of the page in the. It's in the standard classic numbers are printed on the inside of the column in the Koran Tanakh. Vav Tet. That's what I wrote. Vav Tet. Said. Ela Toldot Noach. Okay? And that takes us through till thank you. The beginning of Perek Yud Aleph Ela Toldot B'nei Noach. And then we have, at the beginning of, in the middle of Perek Yud Aleph, Ela Toldot Shem. Shem, the son of Noach. And then we have, just a few psukim later, Yud Aleph Chav Zayin, Ela Toldot Terach. And Ela Toldot Terach takes us from there all the way through to our Pasuk. That takes us all the way through Parshat Lech Lecha, all the way through Parshat Vayera, all the way through Parshat Chaye Sarah, almost all the way through Parshat Chaye Sarah, sorry, not to our Pasuk, but to the very end of last week's Parsha. All of that is Toldot Terach until we get to Perek Chafhei Pasuk Yudbet, the very end of last week's Parsha. And we have a very short section, Ela Toldot Yishmael. That's very short. And then we begin our Parsha, Chaf Hei Yud Tet, with Ela Toldot Yitzchak. Ela Toldot Yitzchak takes us through this week's Parsha and most of next week's Parsha. Parshat Vayetze. I'm sorry, and Parshat Vayishlach. And then we have in Perek Lamed Vav, Ela Toldot Perek Lamed Vav Aleph, Ela Toldot Esav. And then we have in Perek Lamed Zayin, Eile Toldot Yaakov. Is that 10? Yeah. That's why I was getting, I kept counting because I thought I was off. But this was supposed to be the last one, and in fact it is. Okay? And that takes us through the rest of Sefer Brishi. Eile Toldot Yaakov. Okay, we have 10 of these. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now, the concept of a Sefer Toldot, a book of genealogy, or a chronicle of generations, is a literary genre, certainly that was known in the ancient world. Perhaps it's still used in some genres, I'm not sure, but certainly it's a literary type of document that was known. And basically what Rav Breuer showed us here is that the entire book of Bereishit is comprised of 10 of these documents. Again, Perek Aleph either has to be looked at as an introduction to the whole Sefer outside the Mizgeret, or Rav Yolel actually told me that Rav Breuer felt that it was really part of the first Sefer Toldot, but that the book didn't start with that expression for whatever reason. But that's a detail, however you deal with Perek Aleph. But we have here these 10 stories here. Now, if I begin a document with the words Eile Toldot. So if I take the word Toldot, generations, or descendants, in its most literal meaning, I would expect to find what? A genealogy, right? A list of names. And some of these Sifrei Toldot have exactly that. Sefer Toldot Adam is exactly that. It's a list of 10 generations, and it tells us in a very formulaic way each generation, the name of the person, how old he was when he had his next major son, and that he also had other sons and daughters, and how old he was when he died. And we have that list. The list of Toldot Yishmael that we ended last week's parsha also is essentially that as well. But it's clear that Sefer Bereishit contains much material that is not simply lists of names and genealogies or basic biographical information, but rather tells us a whole narrative story. And therefore the phrase Eile Toldot has to be understood not simply as these are the descendants of whoever it is that we're giving the descendants of, but we have to come up with a slightly more, slightly broader definition of the term. For example, Eile Toldot Noach. So in this, what's in this section here? So it tells us, of course, that he had three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yefet. That information is here. But the entire story of the Mabul is the bulk of the section that's delineated by the phrase, Eile Toldot Noach. Because the Mabul is Noach's, do we want to call it his legacy? Do we want to call it his life story? Toldot has to mean not only, a Toldot is a person's, the story of that individual, and of the generations perhaps that followed that individual, everything important that he did and those things that happened to him. And in fact, we even have one Sefer Toldot that's not about a person at all. How could Shamayim Va'aretz have Toldot if Toldot only means children? But if Toldot means this is the chronicle of, this is the story of, so it begins with the story of Shamayim Va'aretz, and then the story of Adam, and then the story of Noah, etc. And therefore, first of all, that gives us a framework for understanding the entire Sefer. It explains a number of passages in Bereishit that seem very strange. For example, the passage that we ended last week's parsha with, the list of all of Yishmael's children. Why is that significant? The Gemara grapples with this question. Why is that significant? Or even more so, at the end of Parshat Vayera, right, we have the story. We have the story of the Akedah, one of the most dramatic moments in the entire Torah. And that finishes. And at the end of that, you know, dramatic moment, and Vayeshev Avraham Le'Be'er Sheva, that was the whole basis of last week's shir. Where did Avraham go? Why did he go to Be'er Sheva? What's going to happen next? Sarah dying. In between there, we're told that Avraham was told, Hinei Yalda Milka Gamhi Banim L'Nachor Achicha. And there's a list of all of his brother's descendants. The fact that Rivka was born is assumedly very significant there, but all the others here. I remember when I heard this from Rav Yolel, he pointed out even, you notice this on Rosh Hashanah, right? We read This is the Akedah is the reading for the second day of Rosh Hashanah, right? And the Baal Koreh is reading with the special tune of Rosh Hashanah, right? Vayhi acharei hadvarim ha'ele b'ha'elokim nisa et Avraham. Right? You can feel the drama, right? But then it continues with all this, and it ends with Ufilak shahu shmari uma b'teled gam hi yetevach v'yet gacham v'yetachash v'yet ma'acha. What is that? Names of people who have, as far as we know, absolutely no significance. And in the middle, and this is what we read on Rosh Hashanah. But if you look at it in its context, right? The Torah begins here with, this is the story of the world. And the story of the world leads to the birth of someone called Adam, or the creation. This is the story of Adam. And that takes us through to one of his main descendants. This is the story of Noach. This is the story of Noah's descendants after the world was destroyed and rebuilt. One particular descendant, Shem. One particular descendant of Shem, Terach. One particular descendant, or actually two. Terach splits ultimately into Yishmael and Yitzchak. Yitzchak splits ultimately into Esav and Yaakov. And this whole story brings us to the end of Sefer Bereshit with Bnei Yisrael, Yordim Mitzrayim. The whole Sefer Bereshit is meant to explain to us. We talked about this also in the shiur we had on Parshat Lech Lecha. That really, if you go back to that Rashi in the very beginning of the Torah, those who were here that time, we pointed out, Rashi claims that the entire Torah should have begun from HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem, when it gives us the mitzvot, but that the entire book of Bereshit was necessary in order to explain to us how Am Yisrael is entitled to have Eretz Yisrael and what Am Yisrael's role is in the world, etc., as we developed in that shiur. All of this, right, this sort of history explains to us how we get to that point that Am Yisrael is in Mitzrayim and that great moment when Am Yisrael is going to be brought out of Mitzrayim to Har Sinai, and from Har Sinai supposed to have gone straight to Eretz Yisrael, and from there the history of the entire world is meant to develop. Along the way, these details have to be filled in. If Abraham has two main sons, Yitzchak and Yishmael, so the Torah has to tell us what happens to Yishmael. And Toldot Yishmael is not very interesting. It's just a list of names. Right? Toldot Yitzchak is much more interesting. Right? But along the way, we hear the names of the descendants of Terach's other children. That's the psukim that I just read with the tune of Rosh Hashanah. The descendants of Yishmael, the descendants of Esav, and some others who live near Esav. That's all. If you look at it in this framework, then it begins to make a certain amount of sense. And again, the phrase Toldot includes one's descendants, but not only one's descendants. It includes one's life story, one's message, one's legacy. What was Noach about? Noach was about the Mabul, etc. So with that understanding, oh, and then just to finish this point, where are the two other places in the Tanakh where this appears? In the book of, did I say Bamidbar before? I meant to say Shmot, I'm sorry. It's in the book of Shmot. Actually, now I'm confused. Maybe I did mean to say Bamidbar. No, I did mean to say Bamidbar. It's like that old joke. I'm never wrong. I was wrong once. I thought I made a mistake, but it turned out I was wrong. I didn't make a mistake. So, that's what happened now. I meant to write this down before I came in here, and I was running a little late. It's Ele Todot Moshe V'Aaron.
I found it. It's Bamidbar Perek Gimel Aleph.
Thank you very much.
I just happened to turn to you.
Oh, Min HaShemayim.
Yeah, really.
Okay. There's no just happened to in this world. Everything has a reason. Gimel, where is it? I'm sorry,
Perek Gimel.
Okay, thank you. Ve'ele toldot Aharon Moshe, b'yom diber Hashem Moshe b'har Sinai, and then it lists the children of Aharon. And Rashi there comments that it's also strange that it starts out with the descendants of Moshe or the toldot of Moshe v'Aharon, and it only tells us about the children of Aharon. But this is one place. And the other place is at the very end of the book of Rut. at the very end of the book of Ruth, which of course the climax and the end of the story of Ruth is the marriage of Ruth and Boaz. And at the very end of the book of Ruth, we read that well, just before that, right? From Perek Dal Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Vayikach Boaz et Ruth Vatila Leisha, they got married. Vayavoy Leah Vayitein Hashem Lahe Rayon Vatele Ben. She became pregnant. She had a child, and they blessed her, etc. And then it says at the end of Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vatekrena Shmo Oved Hu Avi Ishai Avi David. Okay, it tells us that Ruth and Boaz had a child. The child's name was Oved, and he's the father of Ishai, who is the father of David. So it's from here we learn, and perhaps the reader who reads Sefer Ruth the first time might have wondered why the entire book of Ruth is even in the Tanakh. Interesting story, but what's the significance? And perhaps the significance is in this pasuk, that Ruth is not just any old person.
I'm sorry, say
where it is again. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Zayin is what I just read. But Tikrena Shmo Oved, she called her son Oved, Hu Avi Yishai, Avi David. Ruth, therefore, is the great-grandmother of David HaMelech, and the progenitor, ultimately, of all the kings who follow from David, and ultimately of the Melech HaMashiach. Okay, fine. But then, the book of Ruth could have ended there. It contains, though, another small passage, which is phrased in the same expression, the same style as the book of Bereshit. Ve'ele toldot Peretz. Peretz being the son of Yehuda ben Yaakov. And it lists all the generations from Peretz all the way down to Boaz. U'Boaz holid et Oved, Oved holid et Yishai, Yishai holid et David. Which information we had already, right? So basically what we have here is, this is the way Rav Breuer, or Rav Yoel, the way I heard it from Rav Yoel anyway, we have here the 10 Sifrei Toladot that give us the descendants and the the events and the legacy and everything that took place from the creation of the world through these 10 stages all the way down to the birth of the Jewish people in the land of Mitzrayim. And then, later on in the Tanakh, there are these two other little sections. And when you see in the book of Bamidbar, or when you see in the book of Ruth, the phrase Ela Toldot, it is designed to say to you, your mind is supposed to immediately jump back to Sefer Bereshit. When I say Ela Toldot, that says to me Bereshit. Right? Because from Bnei Yisrael, right, this leads to the children of Yaakov. Right? The book of Toldot Yaakov ends with Yaakov's 12 sons and their descendants going down to Mitzrayim. That's what we call Am Yisrael. Right? In the end of Bereshit, in the very beginning of Shemot, they're called Bnei Yisrael. And a few psukim into Shemot, they're called for the first time Am Bnei Yisrael. Right? But there's two within Bnei Yisrael. There are two, the same way that, you know, within Toldot Adam, there's Noach, within Noach, there's Shem, within Shem there's Terach, within Terach there's Yishmael and Yitzchak, within Yitzchak there's Esav Yaakov. Within Yaakov there's 12 tribes, but there's two that need special attention. There's the line of the Kihuna, that's the Eilat Toldot Moshe V'Aharon, that's told to us in Dvarim, I'm sorry, in Bamidbar. And there's the line of David and the kings that come from him, Toldot Peretz, and that's told to us in Ruth. So you can look at that short passage in Bamidbar, and that short passage in Ruth as if they're addendums to the list, and then we have ultimately 12 Sifrei Toladot. Okay? Yes?
How come there isn't any Eilat Toldot Adam?
That's a great question. Subject of a shiur of its own that Rav Breuer gave. Let's leave it as a question. The question is quite noteworthy. Avram's Toldot are told, but they're told as Toldot Terach. Mm-hmm. Right? He's part of Toldot Terach. The question is itself perhaps better than the answer, but you know, there's definitely something to.
Maybe because.
But let's talk instead of Toldot.
But also with Avram, when he was 75, they first started to talk about him. So the Torah. So they
okay,
didn't.
Okay, perhaps. You know, perhaps.
I don't know. Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps that's part of it. Okay, let's talk now with this understanding of the phrase Ela Toldot, that it's not just a phrase, but it's a phrase with a deep significance. Now let's go back again and look at that pasuk. Eila Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. So on the one hand, I expect to find a list of Yitzchak's descendants, which are going to come. But I also expect to find a list or description of Yitzchak's legacy, of Yitzchak's message, of the meaning of Yitzchak's life and that which came after him. And looked at in that light, then that pasuk, which seems so strange, perhaps takes on a new meaning. Eile toldot Yitzchak. What was Yitzchak about? First of all, he's called as Yitzchak ben Avraham. And what are the toldot? What is the legacy of Yitzchak ben Avraham? The legacy is Avraham holidet Yitzchak. Yitzchak's message, Yitzchak's essence, is that he was his father's son. That's who Yitzchak is. And that's what his life represents. Now, on the one hand, if you look at the three avot, of the three, the one who gets the smallest amount of press time in the Torah, the one who gets the smallest amount of attention is Yitzchak. We have lengthy descriptions of all the stories of Abraham. Oto davar, we have lengthy descriptions of the whole life of Yaakov. Of the three, Yitzchak gets the smallest amount of attention. And in much of what we hear about Yitzchak, he's not even really the main protagonist of the stories. In the everything we read about Yitzchak in the beginning of his life, for example, the Akedah, he's there, but he doesn't seem to be the main protagonist of that story. Although, as we spoke about last week, depending on how old he was at the time, maybe he should be viewed as. But at least the way the narrative of the Torah presents it, it's a story about Abraham. He's there as an object of the story. He's there as Abraham's son. Even within Toldot Yitzchak, what we'll read in this week's parsha, right, the whole issue with the Brachot and Yaakov and Esav, he's there in the story, but the story's not really so much about him, it's more about Yaakov and Esav. Most of the time that we see Yitzchak, he appears either as the son of his father or as the father of his children. There's really only one place, one passage in the entire Torah, which is in this week's Parsha, where we see Yitzchak as the main protagonist of the story. So let's take a look at that and let's see what we see there. If we want to see, I don't want to know only about his father, and I don't want to know only about his sons, I want to know about him. So, again, the description of Toldot Yitzchak, which is where we would expect to find this, begins by telling us that he was his father's son. And then, sorry, I turned the page now. Begins by telling us that he was his father's son. We read about the birth of his children, which on the one hand is certainly about him. It talks about how his wife was Akara and how he prayed and she prayed and they were answered. But quickly we see that this was not an ordinary pregnancy. There's something unusual going on. Rivka feels this turmoil within her womb, and she finds out that Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, that she's carrying twins, but not just twins, two nations, and they're wrestling with each other even in utero, and Yaakov is born holding on to Esav's heel. Right? That story is really more about Yaakov and Esav than it is about, and maybe even about Rivka. Yitzchak is not really the protagonist of that story. But then in Perek Chavav, we actually have one Perek in the Torah where, indeed, Yitzchak is the protagonist of the story. Because after that, the focus returns to Yaakov and Esav. But Perek Chavav is legitimately about Yitzchak. So if we're going to find out who Yitzchak was, not just that he was his father's son or that he's his children's father, we're going to find it here. But let's see what we see. Perek Chavav. Vayhi ra'av ba'aretz. There was a famine in the land. We've heard about a famine before. And indeed, the Torah draws our attention to that. Milvad hara'av harishon asher haya bimei Avraham. Ah. There was once a famine before in the life of time of Avraham, before Yitzchak was born. When Avraham first came to Eretz Canaan, there was a famine. And now the Torah says there was a famine in Yitzchak's time too, and the Torah draws our attention to the fact that this was something that had happened to his father as well, right? There was a Rav Ba'aretz, Milvad, in addition to a Rav HaRishon Asher Ayabi Me Avraham. What did Avraham do when there was a famine in the land of Canaan? He went to Mitzrayim, he went to Egypt, and when he got to Egypt, what happened? They took his wife, right? Or tried to take his wife, and he said she was his sister, because he was afraid they would kill him, and they took her, but then they had all kinds of problems, and they realized, before defiling Sarah, they realized what happened, so she was returned, and everything worked out okay. Later on, something similar happened to Avraham and Sarah, when they didn't go to, not in a time of famine, but after Avraham left, like we talked about last week, he left Hebron and he went to live in the land of Gerar, near, and the king Avimelech also, he said she was his sister, and Avimelech took her, and also, it was a close call, but she was returned. Okay, so there was a famine in the time of Avraham. Avraham went to Mitzrayim and had this little incident with his wife. And then later on, Avraham also went to Gerar and had a very similar incident with his wife. Now, Avraham's no longer alive. Sarah's no longer alive. It's a new generation. And we're learning about Yitzchak. And lo and behold, there's a famine, just like happened in the days of Avraham. Vayelech Yitzchak el Avimelech melech plishtim Gerara. He went to Gerar, where the king was Avimelech, be it the same Avimelech, be it the next generation perhaps, who kings oftentimes use the same names, like Pharaoh in Mitzrayim, or Caesar in Greece, right? Rome, I'm sorry. Whether it's the same Avimelech or not, he goes to Gerar. Now, I drew a map on the board last week. You might remember that Gerar is actually on the way to Egypt. So, Avram had gone to Egypt. And later on in his life, he went to Gerar. Yitzchak didn't go to Egypt, he went to Gerar. But it seems that his initial destination was actually Egypt. How do I know that? Because in the next pasuk, Vayera elav Hashem vayomer, al tered Mitzrayma. Shchon ba'aretz, asher omar elecha, gur ba'aretz hazod, ve'yeimcha vavarecheka, ki lecha lezarecha etenet kol ha'aretzot ha'el, vakimoti et ha'shvua, asher nishbati la'avraham avicha. So Yitzchak was on his way to Mitzrayim in the famine, just like his father had done when there was a famine. But Hashem stopped him in Gerar, a place that his father had also gone to, but told him, you don't go down to Mitzrayim. You stay in Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak is the only one of the Avot who never left Eretz Yisrael. Avraham was born in Chutz Laretz, came to Eretz Canaan, immediately had to leave and go to Mitzrayim, and then came back to Canaan. Yaakov was born in Canaan and left the country twice. First he went north to go to Lavan, and then eventually came back, and at the end of his life had to go south, went to Mitzrayim, and lived the last 17 years of his life, and died in Mitzrayim. But Yitzchak was born, lived, and died in Eretz Canaan, never left. And even when he had a reason to leave, Hashem told him, you don't leave. So that actually is unique to Yitzchak, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes. But the pattern here is very much the same pattern as Abraham. He was going to go to Mitzrayim, and when he couldn't go to Mitzrayim, he wound up in Gerar. And Hashem told him, in the context of telling him, you're different, you shouldn't leave the country like your father did, but he told him, that's what you're going to do so that I can give you the blessing that I gave to your father. He promises Yitzchak, Birkat Avraham. And then, it says, that what happened? Pasuk Vav, Vayeshev Yitzchak Bigrar. Vayeshalu Anshei Makom Liishto. They ask about his wife. Vayomer Achoti. He says she's my sister. Because he was afraid to say she's his wife. And so, that sounds familiar. This time Avimelech didn't take her. Avimelech, perhaps, again, we be it the same Avimelech or be it that son of that Avimelech, said, I know already about this family. When they say she's his sister, take it with a grain of salt. Avimelech perhaps learned the lessons of the past. Yitzchak, it sounds like he didn't. Yitzchak repeats Avraham's behavior exactly. And again, Avimelech discovers that she's his sister. That she's not his sister, that she's his wife. And Avimelech rebukes him, just like he rebuked Avraham. And then, it says that Yitzchak moved away a bit from Avimelech, but continued to live in the same general territory, just as his father Avraham had left the immediate vicinity of Gerar and had lived in the broader vicinity. We read about this a little bit last week. And then we read Pasuk Yud Dalet. Actually, let's start with Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayizra Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi, Yitzchak planted. Vayimsa ba'aretz bashana ahi me'ashe arim. He had great success, 100 times the crop he was expected to receive is what he received. Right? The neighborhood of Me'ah Sharim was named that because it was this was the parsha that week, and they wanted to give themselves a bracha that they should be as successful, so they called the neighborhood Me'ah Sharim. He became very, very wealthy. The plishtim were jealous of him. And now look at this. V'chol ha-be'irot asher chafru b'mei Avraham Aviv sitmum plishtim v'imalum afar. Avraham had dug wells in the Eretz HaNegev, right, in the land of the general area of Beersheva, which is the city that Avraham named, except we'll see it gets named again here. But Avraham named that city and that whole area. He had dug wells. And after Avraham passed from the scene, the Plishtim filled up the wells. It's not clear why they did that. One would think that they would... We can understand what... What?
It's in their nature.
It's in their nature.
What the builders do now.
Yes. Indeed. Yes. Those who carry the name of the Plishtim in modern times also do things that, despite us, and wind up hurting themselves as well. Even more than they hurt us, perhaps. So the Plishtim, perhaps, were jealous of Abraham, so they wanted to undo what Abraham had done. Of course, it would have made a lot more sense to take the wells and use them, right? No, they filled them up. So all the wells that Abraham had dug, or that his servants had dug, sitmum plishtim, right? They stuffed up the drains, as you say. Vayimalum afar. Vayomer Avimelech el Yitzchak. Avimelech says, leave, go move away. So vayelech misham Yitzchak vayichan benachal gerar. He lived outside the city in Nachal Gerar, vayishav sham. And what did he do? Vayashov Yitzchak vayachpor et be'erot hamayim asher chafru b'mei Avraham Aviv. He went and dug wells, not new wells. He went and dug the same wells that his father had dug. The plishtim filled them up, and Yitzchak went and dug them again. Vayikra lehen shemot, kashemot asher kara lehen aviv. And he gave them names, but not new names. Avraham dug wells and gave them names. The plishtim filled those wells up and removed them. And Yitzchak went and uncovered them again, dug them again, and once again gave them the very same names that Avraham had given them. And then we read a little bit later on. Pasuk Chavav. Va'Avimelech halach elav migrar. After a while, Avimelech comes to visit him. We might recall that once upon a time, Avimelech had come to visit Avraham. If you go back to Parshat Vayera, in Parshat Vayera, we talked about after Sodom was destroyed, Avraham went to live with Avimelech, and then he left that area, and he lived in the land of Avimelech. And then, after Yitzchak was born, we read in Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Bet, we read, Vayhi ba'etahi. Vayomer Avimelech ufichol sar tzva'o el Avraham lemor v'chule. That at a certain point in time, Avraham was living in the territory ruled by Avimelech. And Avimelech himself came, sort of a royal delegation, to visit Avraham. He came together with his sar tzva, with the head of his army, whose name was Pichol. So Avimelech and Pichol come to meet Avraham, and they have this discussion, and ultimately they make a brit, they make a treaty, a peace treaty, or a mutual assistance pact, or something like that. And in recognition of that great event, they named the place. What did they name the place where this happened? They named it Be'er Sheva, which can be read, among other ways of reading it, as the well of the oath. That's one way to read that expression. They took an oath and at a well, and they named it Be'er Sheva. Now, a new generation, Yitzchak, the son of Avraham, is living in that same area, has redug all the wells that his father dug and gave them the same names. And at some point, Avimelech halach elav migrar, Avimelech, again, maybe the same Avimelech, maybe the next generation with the same name, comes to visit him, and guess who he brings with him? A delegation. Vachuzat mereyehu, ufichol sar tzva'o. And he brings the head of his army, whose name is Pichol. The same one, a different one, I don't know, but the same name. And guess what they do? They have a discussion, and they have some negotiations. And it concludes in the following way. It ends with mutual oaths. This sounds very familiar. Right? Yitzchak is meeting with Avimelech and Pichol, and it ends with an oath. And they talk about a well. And guess what? They decide to give that well a name. Vayikra ota Shiva. They named the well, not Sheva, but Shiva. Alkein Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva Ad Hayom Hazeh. And because of that, they give a name to the city. You know, we made an oath by this well. We call this well Shiva. Let's call this city a name. Let's name the whole city after this oath. Let's call the city Be'er Sheva. I thought the city was already named Be'er Sheva because Avraham had taken an oath with Avimelech. Ladies, this is the entire narrative. We said if we want to see Yitzchak, not as the son of Avram at the Akedah, not as the father of Yaakov and Esav who were fighting over the inheritance. We want to see Yitzchak himself. This is the story of Yitzchak. It's an exact repeat of Avraham's life. Eile toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. What's Yitzchak's life about? Avraham holide Yitzchak. But what does that mean?
Like father, like son.
Like father, like son. Is that an accomplishment though? We all want our children to follow our general path. We want them to be like us. But we also want our children to go beyond us, right? We want our children ultimately to accomplish something of their own.
I guess it depends how great the father is, though. You know, if your father, like son, if your father is someone that you really look up to and that he became the father of all, not only of the Jews, but of all different religions.
Av Hamon Goyim, right?
Yeah. So perhaps if in this case, like father, like son is.
Okay, certainly right. If your father is someone great, so then. But I think perhaps there's something more to it than this. I think that to look at it only in that way would be shortchanging Yitzchak. Because what Yitzchak did at this point was exceedingly crucial. History has known many people like Abraham. Abraham was a charismatic person. Abraham was an iconoclast. Abraham went against the entire world. He came into the world with a message and he was willing to go against everyone. Really, one man, right? Chazal say Abraham ha-Ivri he's called. Ivri comes from the word Ever, which means side. The whole world was on one side, and he was on the other side, all by himself. A rabbinic friend of mine once gave a drasha and tried to dramatize this. And he said, imagine a roller skating rink. And everyone's skating, or an ice skating rink if you want. Everyone's skating around and around and around and around and around, and there's one person who's skating the other way. That was Abraham. And we talked. If you remember the shiur we had in Parsha Lech Lecha, we talked about how Avraham came into the world as one person who saw the world differently. And Hashem picked him up from where he was and said, Lech Lecha, I'm going to make you a great nation. And your message, right now you're skating in the opposite direction. But eventually everyone's going to turn around. The whole world's going to follow you. Right? And that's going to be a mission, not for your lifetime, but a mission for all of history. And indeed, we talked about how today that mission is a lot closer to being fulfilled than it was then. Today, there are many people that are skating in that direction, even if there are still some skating in the other direction. But how does that happen? You can be the greatest leader. You can be the most inspiring person. You can have the most important ideas, and you can have the most charismatic leadership, and you can be wise, and you can be effective. And history has known many such great people. But they're all people. And all people are mortal. And the day will come when every person passes from this world and someone has to carry on after him. And that's ultimately the test of a great leader. There are those who manage to put into place systems that continue long after them. And there are those who, the minute they're gone, everything begins to fall apart. And it takes two sides to make it permanent. It takes a leader who knows how to pass it on to the next generation, but it also takes somebody in the next generation who's going to be able to follow through. Abraham was an innovator. Yitzchak was not. And that is exactly the significance of what Yitzchak did. Yitzchak didn't chart new ground. Yitzchak made sure that Avraham was not an individual, but the founder of a dynasty, the founder of a tradition. Eile toldot Yitzchak. What does Yitzchak represent? Avraham holidit Yitzchak. He shows that his father may be gone, but his father's message is not gone. His father dug wells, and wells have great symbolism, sources of water. Chazal tell us, Ein mayim ela Torah. Those wells represent not only physical sustenance, but they represent the message that Abraham brought into the world. And those Plishtim perhaps didn't like that message. And even if it hurt them, more important than getting the water is making sure that all of Abraham's messages are erased. So they cover up the wells, and they erase them as if they were never there. And comes along Yitzchak ben Abraham, and digs those same wells, uncovers them again, and makes sure that they have the same names. He doesn't come out with a new message. He is the one who makes sure that Avraham's message remains permanent. Yes, Be'er Sheva represented this great moment, the meeting of Avraham and the rest of the world. But I guess the name of the city was forgotten. Not just the name of the city, but what that name represents. The interface between Avraham and the rest of the world. The mutual treaty, which is going to allow Avraham's message to reach the world. So, once again, Avimelech and Pichol are forced to come. And once again, they take an oath. And once again, the city is named. And this time, Al Kain Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva Ad Hayom Hazeh. This time it's permanent. So Yitzchak is the one who turns Avraham. And those who want to go, by the way, back to the Akedah, I believe it's Rav Soloveitchik. I believe it was Rav Soloveitchik who discussed the role of Yitzchak in the Akedah, especially if we read it with a reading that has Yitzchak being not a young child, but an adult who's fully capable of his actions. And Rav Soloveitchik points out that Yitzchak was different. Yitzchak's challenge was greater than Abraham's. Now you could say, yeah, well, he's the one who's going to be killed. I'm not sure what's harder. I thank God I've never, and hope to never be neither of these. I'm not sure whether it's easier to be slaughtered or to slaughter one son. I don't want to really ask that question. But there was one, besides that, there was one fundamental difference. At least Abraham had one thing. God himself appeared to Abraham and told him, this is what you have to do. God didn't appear to Yitzchak. Yitzchak had to get the message from his father Abraham. Yitzchak had to base his life not on divine revelation, but on Mesorah, on tradition. And Yitzchak is the one who has to implement that tradition, and by doing that, Yitzchak makes himself something permanent. But it would also be a mistake to think that all there is to Yitzchak, that Yitzchak is exactly a copy of Abraham. By the way, I meant to mention this also. Rashi quotes a midrash that it says when Yitzchak was born, so it says that they named him Yitzchak. And that all the people rejoiced when they saw the son of Abraham. And Rashi tells us, based on the Midrash, that there had been some gossip going around. See, it's a great miracle, of course, that a 90-year-old woman married to a 100-year-old man has a child, and suddenly after so many years of marriage on top of that. But if you read the biblical narrative, something had happened shortly before Sarah became pregnant with Yitzchak, and that is that brief episode where he traveled to Avimelech, and Avimelech had briefly taken Sarah to be his wife, never consummating any sort of relationship, but she came back from that incident, and shortly afterwards she was pregnant. So they were late Sanei Hador, said Rashi, who were spreading rumors that, you know, it must be that Avraham's not actually the father. Me'avimelech nit'abra Sarah. That's what they were saying. I mean, look at all these years, no child, and all of a sudden, pitom, she has this little rendezvous with Avimelech, and suddenly, and so to silence them, says the Midrash, it was a miracle, and Yitzchak was born looking exactly like Avraham, so that no one could deny that he was Avraham's son, spitting image, like they say, of his father, so that everyone had to admit that it's based on the pasuk Vatomer Mimi Leila Avraham Heinika Vanim Sarah Ki Aladati Bein Lutzvunav. Everyone had to admit and rejoice that not only did Sarah have a child, which was of course undeniable, but that Avraham also had a child. And if you take that midrash and put it into the context of what we're just talking about, look how fitting that is. Yitzchak looked exactly like Avraham. Eile Toldot Yitzchak. Avraham Holid at Yitzchak. He's his father's son. He looks like his father, and his life is a repeat of his father's life. However, it's a mistake to think that that's all there is to Yitzchak. Because Yitzchak, although he bears so many similarities to Avraham, and how his life's legacy essentially is that he's Avraham's son, in a certain sense, that turns Yitzchak into the opposite of his father. It's a paradox. He's the exact replica of his father, but that exactly makes him the opposite of his father. Because his father's an innovator, and Yitzchak is not an innovator. And one who follows is not the same as one who leads. And indeed, Yitzchak is a very different personality than Avraham. Chazal described this in many ways in conjunction with the experience of the Akedah. That Yitzchak was placed on the Mizbeach and was meant to be a Korban. And although he was spared and not actually killed, he became a Korban. He became as if he's a sacrifice. When he later became blind, there's a midrash, which I believe Rashi quotes. The midrash that says that how did Yitzchak become blind? When he was on the Mizbeach at the Akedah, the Malachim in Shemayim, the angels were crying, and their tears fell into his eyes and blinded him. What in the world does that mean? I think what it means is that by being in that situation, by being this Korban, Yitzchak was sort of elevated to a different plane of existence where he's kind of removed from the world around him. He doesn't really see the world anymore. Yitzchak is living in his own enclosed sort of spiritual world where he's not completely in contact with the world around him. And that led to problems, perhaps. It perhaps made it difficult for him to understand his own children, for him to realize which child needs the bracha. Rivka's able to see. Rivka's able to know which child needs the bracha. Yitzchak doesn't necessarily see that because Yitzchak is blinded by his life's experience. Yitzchak is a very different model than Abraham. Later on in Kabbalah, I don't know exactly what this means, but there are seven svirot, and each one is associated with one of the figures in Tanakh. We have the Ushpizin on Sukkot. The seven Ushpizin are connected to these seven svirot. And Abraham is connected to the svirah of Chesed, and that, of course, is Abraham's entire life. Chesed in the sense of helping people, chesed in the sense of giving, chesed in the sense of impacting on the world around. That's Avraham. And Yitzchak is identified as Gvura. And Gvura, we know in Chazal, Ezehu Gibor HaKoveshet Yitzro. The ultimate Gvura, the ultimate heroism is not external but internal. Right? A person who perfects himself internally. That's what Gvura is. And that's what Yitzchak was. Yitzchak does not go out and chart new ground. He's not an innovator. And therefore Yitzchak represents, either you could call him a follower and not a leader, and that's very important too. We need followers as much as we need leaders. Otherwise, if no one follows the leader, then he's not leading anyone anywhere. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps we can look at Yitzchak as a different type of a leader. I'm not sure which is the correct, but it's definitely a different model. It's a very different model. It's not the model of going out and impacting on the world. It's the model of, if you want the Beit Midrash, if you want the model of the kolel, if you want the model of the contemplative, the spiritual, the study, the prayer. And it is that model in conjunction with Avraham that on the one hand ensures that Avraham has a continuity and on the other hand complements Avraham. And from the first stage of Avraham to the second stage of Yitzchak is going to the next come, of course, Yaakov. Yaakov is called Tiferet, glory. And that's perhaps a synthesis of these two models. So I think that's what the pasuk means. The pasuk that we started with, which sounded very, very strange, actually is extremely significant, and it means exactly what it says. Ela toldot Yitzchak. What is Yitzchak about? He's about Avraham holidat Yitzchak. He's about taking what he learned from his parents and making sure that it's passed on to his children. And that's not a small task at all. That is perhaps the most significant task of all.